and welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for Apex Race Manager, the mobile strategy game. On this week's edition, the Brazilian Grand Prix, Nico Rosberg isn't yet the world champion, but is Max Verstappen the new Ayrton Senna? That's all to come in this edition of the Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato, and joining me this week to review a wet and wild Brazilian Grand Prix, his name's Fernando Campos. He's assured me he's dried out after the race, and he's from podcast F1 Brazil. Fernando, how are you?
Hello, Michael. Hello, everyone. I'm fine, just dried out from the race, and pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be here to recap this eventful and awesome Brazilian Grand Prix.
It was a bit of a slow burn, I suppose, but it came alive in such an incredible way, considering at some times we thought the race was never even going to finish, considering how much rain there was. I guess there's so much debate about the conditions and what effect they had on the race, but you were a man who was there. You can tell us firsthand just how bad was that rain.
We arrived at a circuit 7 a.m. The race ended at barely 6 p.m. It was raining the whole way through. We knew at the circuit that the conditions wasn't going to get better, even though they red flagged it, which was actually worse because they had a trail going, they had a racing line going, but after the red flag, it got erased pretty much. So it was raining a lot. We were in a sector that didn't have a roof, so we were enduring that rain. And at times we looked pretty much like homeless people. We were missing only the dog and a fireplace. Aside from that, we were looking like homeless people because, like, plastic all over us, plastic on the bags, otherwise they would get wet. So it was hard, but it's part of the fun of enduring something to watch
this. It's all part of Formula One, I suppose. Raining is a part of Formula One. That's something, it's a debate topic that's actually been brought up quite a bit this week. And we may as well start with that, considering that running in the rain has been a topic of conversation pretty much the whole year because we've had a couple of wet starts to Grand Prix this season. Next year, they're going to tweak the rules regarding safety car starts. It means that there will still be a standing start after the rain's cleared enough. What was the reaction from the stands? The Brazilian Grand Prix is known for its passionate fans, but when the safety car start was announced, or when it started, I suppose, people tend not to react to it that well, do they?
It was mixed feelings because we were sitting at the main straight and we could see how bad the spray was. After three or four cars, we couldn't see a thing, and the spray was actually reaching us. So we didn't like it, but we could understand the FIA thinking on starting with the safety car because it was quite bad. And like I said, it was raining the whole way through, so we knew it wouldn't get better any sooner.
Yeah, and it's down to the fact that it is safety, and it's also the exploratory aspect, which they're keeping for next year. The fact that drivers want to know where all the puddles are and when the grip is, so they're not just going blind, which I imagine helped Lewis Hamilton. Now, when you woke up on Sunday morning, certainly when I woke up sort of 10 minutes before the race started, because it was 3 a.m. where I was, and saw the rain, the first thought was, well, this is no good for Nico Rosberg, because all season long, he's really been no good in the rain. I guess this was just, you know, if the start was the one opportunity for him to maybe jump Hamilton. I mean, did you think the race was lost to Rosberg as soon as you saw the rain coming down?
Rosberg has been playing with the advantage he has. So from five races from now, he hasn't been as risky as he was. He hasn't been aggressive as he was. He's playing with the difference he has. So if he gets a second place, a third place, it's okay. But when it's raining, the race is pretty much unpredictable. He can miss, he can lose his car way, way more easily. So I guess he was a lot more nervous. And when we saw Verstappen attack on him, we knew that he was really scared. And I'm pretty sure that the last third of the race, he was running with engine save mode because Hamilton opened like 20-second advantage from Rosberg in like 10 laps. It was absurd.
Yeah, and Hamilton said he was just chilling the whole time, which I don't know if I'm inclined to believe or not.
It's hard to chill there, I can assure you that. Going 300 kilometers an hour in a wet track, it's hard to chill.
Yeah, I reckon so. It's interesting as well because one of the stories we've had in wet races all year, and almost for the last good few years, considering you don't ultimately get that many wet races, is the wet weather tyre, Pirelli's full wet weather tyre. Drivers love complaining about them, and this was no exception. And a lot of drivers tried to switch to the intermediate, as we'll talk to momentarily. It didn't really work for them because it was just way too wet. This is something that's got to improve for next year, I suppose, because ultimately the fact that the drivers didn't have confidence in that tyre, even though they all use them in the end, probably contributes to how much they can race when it's really wet like this.
Yeah, the blue tyre became the safety car tyre, pretty much. Yeah. Like they only run with the wet tyre when they are behind the safety car. And drivers started to use the inters because they started to see the trail, and I guess they don't like you said, they don't like the wet tire. It feels uncomfortable, and it feels like it is designed for a reasonable rain, not a really extreme rain like we had. So it has to be tweaked, and the inters actually kind of worked a little bit, but then we had the red flag, and the racetrack got pretty much restarted as well.
Let's go to the fact that a lot of drivers did switch. About half the field, in fact, did switch to the intermediate tyre pretty much straight after the opening safety car returned to the pits. Kevin Magnussen started it, I guess, because he had nothing to lose, and also he knows he's leaving Renault, so if he crashes the car, it doesn't really matter. It didn't really work for anyone, though. It seemed like the pace was improving. There were some times that cars were 1 second, 1.5 seconds faster, but it was so unpredictable, like you said, because the rain never really eased up. I mean, do you think this was just too big a gamble for some of these cars to risk the intermediate tire?
I guess it's the usual train of thought. When you're with the blue tire, you want to get to the green tire as soon as possible. Actually, Bottas thought about starting in the inters because when he got to the grid, we saw that like on the grandstand. He went to the grid with the green tires. So I guess Williams tried to start in the green tires as well. Of course, they had second thoughts. But they risked it. And it's a good risk to take. But at least they had the red flag to switch it up. They didn't have to waste a full pit stop. And it's the usual train of thought. You want to get quicker as soon as possible. And the track was getting better because they were starting to set the racing line. And the red flag just restarted it. It was funny to see on the second red flag because a lot of people in the grandstand thought the race was over. So a lot of people left the circuit.
Right.
A lot of people left the circuit.
Because we saw that on the television. A lot of people seemed to come back as well once the engines fired up. So I just assumed everyone went and grabbed a drink or something to kill some time. But were people actually leaving the track?
No, people got mad because they wanted to see a race. They wanted to see a race going, right? But we could understand that, especially after Bianchi's crash in Suzuka, which wasn't actually only the rain's fault. But after that, they are really conservative regarding rain. But a lot of people thought the race was over, started doing the math with half the points, and left the circuit. A lot of people, like on the fence, we had dozens of flags. Wrapped up Argentina flags, Uruguay flags. After the second red flag, we had like 3 or 4 because those people left the circuit. I guess a lot of people had flights booked up already and they thought the race was over, so they left the circuit, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I remember once one of the Malaysian Grand Prix I went to was also rained out. And then, I almost missed my flight, yeah. So it's sort of, you know, I can understand the temptation to not want to miss your flight, but they missed a serious race by the end of it. Hopefully some of them made it back into the track at very least.
Yeah, it was the longest Brazilian Grand Prix in history. It was like 3 hours and a minute, so...
Oh, trust me, I was counting those minutes until I could go back to bed, I can tell you that.
I can imagine it. My reaction on the Malaysian Grand Prix you were on was the same, because it's an evening race for us, so I was having the same reaction.
Now, one of the things that, although it seems like because we had a red flag period in the middle, lap 20 was the first one, that it sort of neutralized the race, in reality, a lot of drivers lost out because they'd risked that early pit stop. In fact, about half the field did, including both Red Bull cars, including Sebastian Vettel, because they'd already made this stop onto the intermediate tyre that wasn't working. Yes, they got a free stop back onto the wets, but it sort of meant a lot of drivers found themselves out of the running. But alternatively, the drivers who had looked to Mercedes as sort of the king of strategy in this era of Formula 1, both Force Indias, so doing Perez, Hülkenberg, Carlos Sainz, even Felipe Nasr, which will become important towards the end of the race, and likewise Esteban Ocon, suddenly found themselves in the top 10 and potentially scoring a whole lot of points. Can you imagine the tension that must have been in those garages? Lap 20, you're running in the top 5.
Like Marcus Winkelhock leading the European Grand Prix, right? Those two guys... Nasser and Ocon started right in front of us. They were the last row, the 21st and 22nd. And all of a sudden, we were seeing Nasser in sixth, and Ocon in seventh. We couldn't understand a thing. And they were really, really, really lucky because they had the red flag to go through. And we were discussing after the race, did Nasser actually had a pit stop? And he didn't. He played with the Mercedes, like you said, and played it perfectly, made his race, didn't bother about copying anyone's strategy. And don't get me wrong, because he didn't get ninth place just because of strategy, because he fended off Alonso, he fended off Vettel for dozens of laps. So he had a great race, apart from being really lucky.
Yeah, and I think this goes to show, in the battles we've been having, especially in the second half of the year, which has largely been between Mercedes and Red Bull Racing, normally we're praising the risk-taking Red Bull takes, especially when you compare to Ferrari, which is taking pretty much no risks, and inevitably Red Bull's winning. But in a race like this, where not only do you not know what the weather's going to do, but it's really, really wet, track position is, again, the absolute key thing, as we found for almost everybody except for Max Verstappen, but everyone else, as long as you were on the track ahead of other cars, it was almost too hard to overtake. And I do want to ask, because I found this really interesting, we talk a lot about the idea of the wet line in wet races. It seemed to me as if almost every driver had forgotten about that except for pretty much Max, because everyone was just following everybody else except on the main straight where there's a lot of spray and they wanted to move out of the way. And so no one was doing a lot, when I think Verstappen, and granted he had new tyres towards the end of the race when he passed almost everybody, but he was the only driver really taking advantage of that.
No, Verstappen pretty much ignored the concept of a racing line. That overtake he did on Nico Rosberg on the outside, it was just, I don't care if it's wet, I'm going to find grip here and I'm going to overtake you, I don't care how. He went for it, and it was really, really awesome to see that happening, because we were doing the math. Like, it was 10 laps to go, he was, I don't know, 7th, and we were discussing, oh, he's going to overtake Nasser, but he's not going to get to the podium. There's only 10 laps left. Mm-hmm. And he got Vettel, and he got Sainz, and he got Perez with 2 laps to go. That was absurd. He closed up on the next guy really, really quickly. Of course, he had new tires, but he almost got the race on his hands on the second safety car. If the rain had eased up there, he would have new inters, and he would be in 4th, close to the guys, with a track that was drying up. If the track dried up there, the win would be his by a mile.
Now, this is the fascinating part of the race, and Max Verstappen is easily the most talkable part of this Grand Prix. He was, as you said, ahead of Nico Rosberg after the second red flag. He passed him in a really ambitious move that Rosberg didn't really seem any interest in defending, probably didn't see him in the first place. But then Red Bull gambled that second place, what should have been a second place, potentially first place, who knows, but second place anyway, on the intermediate tire, even though everyone was saying on team radio that the rain looked like it was going to increase. Now, I guess this is all part of the idea that to beat Mercedes, you have to do something different. But I guess this really, that almost lost him the race.
Yeah, what we thought there was, okay, Ricardo pitted 3 laps ago. He's running with inters. And maybe Red Bull saw that the inters are going well, so they're going to set Verstappen with a set of green tires as well. That was our train of thought. And if you see, Bottas ended with intermediate tires as well, and Wöhrlein tried it as well. So the track wasn't as bad as we think, that everyone had to run with blue tires. But it was a risk anyway, because like we said, we knew the rain wasn't going to get better. So he was betting on the racing line, which of course didn't happen. And when he saw that the tires wouldn't last until the end of the race, he decided that, okay, I'm going to stop now and I'm going to push the Mad Max button here, try to overtake everybody and their mother and try to get a podium here, because it was better to have a tire exploding.
Yeah, well, it seems just about like that. And I think he said at the end of the race, you know, there's not like there's a championship on the line. I just want to have fun out there, pretty much. What was incredible is just the number of cars he passed. He dropped all the way down to 16th, I think it was. And then some cars stopped. But in essence, he passed everyone up to third place. And the parallels this race has been drawn against, and particularly poignant, I think, given that we were in Brazil, some of the best drives of Ayrton Senna, Max Verstappen was being compared to. Does that ring true for you? Is this one of those great drives that we'll be talking about in years and decades to come?
I saw some tweets about it after the race, and I can agree with you about it, because he found grip where no one was finding. He overtook half of the grid with 10 laps to go. In a wet, he's truly a great driver in a wet track. So it was a stuff of legend, sorry, because we saw a lot of drivers being way too careful, Rosberg included, whereas he was just trying to have fun. He was risking it. Like you said, he didn't have a championship to worry about. He was just trying to have fun, and he was decisive in every single overtake. Because if you think, if he got stuck behind Sainz or Vettel or Nasser, for example, he wouldn't be able to reach Paris because he had very few laps to go. So he had to be decisive and direct in every single overtake he went for. Vettel didn't complain a lot about that overtake on the third sector, which I thought he would complain a lot about. But Verstappen did everything absolute perfect, which he needed to in order to get a podium.
Vettel, I think, maybe a little bit chastised after the events of Mexico and all the fallout and so on. Anyone who hasn't seen it, go and look at the lap chart, because it is almost one car a lap that Max Verstappen passed in the final part of that race after changing off the intermediate tyres, which he had to do because they just simply weren't working and the rain was increasing. And like you say, if it hadn't increased the rain, he could have ended up there or further up anyway. But an interesting strategy from Red Bull Racing nonetheless, and again, like a classic drive. And I think it's really interesting because Lewis Hamilton's the man we normally talk about in modern Formula One as a guy who just masters conditions like this. We all remember Silverstone 2008, wasn't it, where he won by an incredible number of seconds. It was more than a minute, I think it was, in fact, which is ludicrous when you think about it.
While Massa was spinning 7 times, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you can't necessarily say that that's just the difference in quality of the driver, but these guys are really, really good in the wet. Hamilton obviously had a pretty easy time in Brazil. He was in the front and he led from there, but what can we read out of this? The fact that Max Verstappen did so well, Hamilton didn't have to do that well because he was already in front, but do you feel like there's a challenge coming to Hamilton's wet weather throw?
Oh, that's for sure. If you see that save Max did on the uphill section, that half spin he had, he was like centimeters off the wall, and that was right in front of us. That was shocking. We thought he was going straight to the wall because we saw Ericsson and we saw Massa spinning on the same way. And he was as calm as he could, like just turned the wheel, stopped, turned the wheel again. So he has that finesse that you have to have on wet weather races. He knows where the grip is. We saw on the overtake in Nico Rosberg, he knows where the fast lane is, and he knows how to control the car. He showed every single talent he has in wet races on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And it was incredible to see that save, actually. And I encourage anyone to, if it hasn't been taken down by the powers of Formula One, to go onto YouTube and find the Dutch commentary for that moment, because it is very impressive to watch. It was an incredible drive from Max Verstappen. There are a couple of other drivers I do want to talk about who had less incredible drives. We could talk about the crashes, but I want to talk more about Jenson Button, who really, in conditions like this, is the man everyone looks to, is the guy who can read the grip, read the conditions. He switched to intermediates twice during this Grand Prix, including before the first red flag and then a little bit afterwards, and just could not get anything to work. In fact, I think he crossed last of all the finishers who crossed the checkered flag. He was last of all of them. It's really unusual to see a performance like him in these conditions.
Yeah, and it's not a top speed track that would sacrifice McLaren's speed. Mm-hmm. But he was the second driver to try out the intermediate tires. Only Magnussen tried it before him, and he was the second driver to try it on the second time. Only Palmer tried after him, which is no parameter. But it was like a risk-taking race, just like Verstappen, but he went for the wrong risks. He took two strikes there. And I don't know, maybe he wasn't in his best performance. It was funny because we saw the grid going, then we had Massa, then we had Button way behind, and the guys that are going to retire, they just like gave up on a race. Okay, I'm just going to complete this. Okay, 71. Okay.
It's an interesting idea to bring up. Certainly, Jensen Button does sound like he's looking forward to retirement. Certainly, after that race, you can say that much. If we look at the cars that did crash, and this is... Actually, before we look at the cars that did crash, I want to look at the cars that were really affected by the red flags and in between the red flags, because there were two of them. They were almost joined because there wasn't any real racing between them, only safety car laps. First of all, I want to ask, that second red flag, as we sort of mentioned, contentious amongst a lot of people, but even amongst a lot of drivers, some of whom seemed to suggest they didn't understand why they were having a second red flag when conditions were improved. Do you feel like that second red flag was called for? Could we have had more safety car laps? Could we have had some racing laps, or was that the only way forward?
I feel like we had way too much safety car laps because they were trying out the track, okay, but when you're almost reaching 10 safety car laps and those laps are race laps, they're going to be wasted. Just red flag it and wait to see if it is going to improve. Being Interlagos, we knew that it wasn't going to improve. So, and the second red flag, so just go straight through it, straight through the second red flag. They tried out the track, it was extreme. Hamilton said, I don't know why they're red flagging it again. It's extreme conditions, it's natural for Formula One. And it didn't improve, I can guarantee you that. From the first one to the second one, it didn't improve. Maybe they saw the reaction of the crowd, maybe they saw the rejection on the media, maybe, but it didn't improve. They just wanted to risk it after our reaction there, or the reaction from the people on the whole world watching it and being maybe not agreeing with the FIA on the second red flag decision.
I'm glad you do say there, though, that the red flag is useful to save race laps, because I think that's a thing that a lot of people don't think about enough. When they see the red flag, everyone just says, well, it's overcautious, it's an abundance of safety, all of which is true. I mean, safety is important. That's an important part of the red flag. But what it critically does, as opposed to the safety car, means that if you can wait for the conditions to clear, which they didn't really do, but they did clear up enough that they could resume, it means you haven't wasted any laps. And ultimately, everyone at the track, everyone watching on the television, just wants to see the full distance, which, to the FIA's credit, we got exactly the full distance.
Yeah, we had seven laps behind the safety car before the first start. Then we had maybe six or seven trying out the track before the second red flag. So there we have almost 20 laps wasted behind the safety. Not wasted, because they were trying to see if the track was okay. But we could divide that by half. Yeah. If we had 10 laps to try out the track, that was enough, and that wouldn't waste as much race as they did.
A couple of drivers who had so much potential in this race, but ultimately was not fulfilled. The first is Kimi Raikkonen, who crashed out from third. We forget how high Kimi Raikkonen is. In fact, Kimi Raikkonen had other than the crash, obviously, a pretty good weekend overall in Brazil, except it all just came undone in the conditions.
Him and Grosjean, but before we talk about Grosjean, he had a pretty good weekend in Brazil. It's a Kimi Raikkonen weekend right now.
Yeah.
He doesn't shine, he doesn't call up our attention, but he's there fourth and third, being consistent, and he's up there. He's just Kimi Raikkonen now. It's his mojo.
Yeah.
And Grosjean was actually 0.3 behind Kimi Raikkonen on the qualifying on Saturday. Okay, it was dry, but he was 0.3 behind another Ferrari engine, so he had a lot of potential starting out in seventh, and he is a good wet weather driver. But he spun out on the installation lap. That can show us how bad the condition was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he was driving at 6 kilometers an hour and still spun out. So, and a lot of people spun out there.
Yeah.
So that can show you how bad the condition was.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a driver that we've hardly mentioned at all because, he didn't take part in the race. It was disappointing to see Kimi Raikkonen's race end there. Another man who had a lot to race for but didn't work out, granted to no fault of his own though, was Nico Hülkenberg, who at the first red flag was running in fourth. The first red flag caused after Kimi Raikkonen's accident, of course, but then picked up a puncture on the way out of that intermediate safety car period between the two red flags, had to stop, dropped all the way down to 15th, recovered to 7th, but so much to play for considering, a podium could have been at stake, considering he would have been defending against Max Verstappen at the end of the race. Could have done it, who knows?
Yeah, he almost won here in 2012 in raining conditions with the Force India. So, of course, Hülkenberg is a man to watch. He had a pole here when he was at Williams. So he's a really good, not only wet weather driver, but Interlagos driver.
Yeah.
He was really unlucky, especially being behind the safety car, almost like Ericsson in Hungary, that he spun out behind the safety car.
Yes.
Really, really unlucky. He had potential.
Yeah, extremely unfortunate for him, but it was nonetheless a big weekend for Force India, considering neither Williams' car finished in the points, but Force India both had points finishes and some high points finishes. So that's good news for them in fourth in the Constructors' Championship, which has been their target for the entire year. And another driver, whilst he wasn't running particularly high, because the Williams is no good in wet conditions, but was Felipe Massa in certainly what was the emotional touch point of this Grand Prix. He crashed out. He caused a safety car, which actually kind of worked for him because he got to walk back to the pit. So I guess, you know, it's a bittersweet ending, if you like. But tell me a little bit about the reaction from the stands, because this is a guy who's been around for ages. He's won hearts everywhere he's gone, pretty much.
We were discussing that it was almost better for him to crash out there than finishing 12th at the end of the race. And I can guarantee you that a lot of people cried, me included. I caught myself crying like a child when he started. So he was right in front of us. Mm-hmm. The first Massa cheer was we started it. And when he started to cry there, it was touching, because a lot of good memories, and he had a lot of humanity. The way he reacted in 2008, that he lost the title on the last corner, and he's still like cheered and said that he was going to be back. He had a terrible crash in Hungary. So he had a pretty up and down career. He was really humble, really, like, he was a really kind driver. Everyone liked him on the grid. Seeing him crying over there, walking right in front of us, and then Mercedes showed up. I would understand if Ferrari showed up, because he was a Ferrari driver. But Mercedes showing up to applaud him was something I wouldn't imagine, and really touching as well. So we caught ourselves crying a lot, like babies. We were cheering. All of a sudden, we look left, look right, and everyone is just trying to wipe out the tears, because the tears. Because it was amazing, amazing. Good to see that in person. And he went out in a good way. Something that even Barrichello didn't have. Because he left Formula 1 because he didn't have a seat. So he didn't have a farewell race.
Yeah.
Massa had. And it was a pretty honorable way to go out.
I know, I certainly found myself with a lump in my throat at that point. Because Felipe Massa was the driver that got me into Formula 1. You know, that 2008 season.
Wow.
The way, like you say, he reacted at the end of 2008 was the, like, defining moment where Formula 1 went from, like, a nice sport to watch to the sport.
Nice.
You know, my sport, you know. Tell me a bit about, you know, Felipe Massa. How much is he regarded in Brazil? He's certainly well regarded in the paddock and around the world, even though he hasn't won a world championship. But considering there is such a long list of fantastic and iconic Brazilian drivers in Formula 1, what's his standing amongst the Brazil community?
I can say we have two types of Massa fans, quote-unquote. The one that was used to Senna and Piquet and Fittipaldi and can't recognize what Massa meant and how he reacted in 2008 and how humble he is, because they're used to see the Brazilian winning or being on the podium every single race. So when Massa starts to get 4th, 5th or 6th, even though he's giving everything he has and he's being a second driver to Alonso and he's trying everything he can, the paddock respects him because they see the driver he is. But the regular Brazilian F1 fan who used to wake up to see Ayrton Senna winning, not to watch the race itself, doesn't have that bond with Felipe Massa. Just see him as a failure. As a quote-unquote failure. Because, oh, after 2008, after the incident in 2009, he wasn't the same. He's just a driver that is there. He's not successful. He's not... we can't respect him. We had something like that with Barrichello after he started to be a second driver to Schumacher, and he was an average champion. So that heritage that we have to see Senna, Piquet, and Fittipaldi always winning is a bit of a problem now, because when the person is not an avid F1 fan, can't see the effort that he's putting, like Nasser getting a ninth place with a Sauber is like a win. But for the person, he was supposed to get third, second, or first to get our attention, because that's how the person was used to see the Brazilians always winning and the Brazilian anthem and so on and so forth. The last Brazilian to win a race was Barrichello in 2009. So there you can see that the usual Brazilian fan is starting to get mad, and they start to discount that on Massa. And Massa reacted like that pretty much because the people there that are on the circuit are the avid F1 fan. The fan that knows what he meant for the country and for F1 itself. And we recognized that and applauded him because he went through a lot in Brazil. I can guarantee you that.
And it was certainly a touching moment, an end to his career, one race to go. There is one more Brazilian on the grid. You mentioned him there, Felipe Nasser. Hasn't got a seat for next year yet, though, it must be said, but ninth place for Sauber, which has elevated them to 10th in the Constructors' Championship in what was a pretty tense, if largely untelevised, battle for points against Esteban Ocon from Manor. That's an important place. And I guess, you mentioned there, he's not a driver that's winning races at the moment, but it'd be pretty important to maintain a Brazilian in Formula One, I'd have thought, as it is for pretty much any country to have an interest in Formula One.
Yeah, Ecclestone has a particular interest in keeping a Brazilian in the calendar because we are a big audience, regardless of a Brazilian winning or not. But Nasser's reaction after the race, it was pretty unexpected because he started on 21st, so we didn't expect even a point. So his radio after the race, did you get to listen to his reaction?
I don't know that I heard it, actually. No,
he was pretty much crying, like Grosjean's radio when Haas got a 6th or 7th. He was crying on the radio like, this is a win for us, I can't believe we got it. That's why we don't give up. So that shows us how Sauber is a mess and how he could get away from that. And that can guarantee him a seat in Sauber or Manor, because those are pretty much the only ones that are left. He had a lot of talks with Forsinha, but that obviously ended up with Ocon, with Renault, but that obviously ended up with Palmer and Hülkenberg. So at least for one more year, if he can endure Sauber and Manor, we know that he has some sort of an arm, because it's not easy to get a Sauber to the points in a in a soaked Brazilian Grand Prix. Let's see, he has money to back him up. Let's see. I'm not that scared that we will not have a Brazilian on the grid next year. Of course, he won't be getting points every race, but it's good to have at least one.
Yeah, and surely Sauber can only improve from this position, although they are using old engines next season, so we'll wait and see. A fantastic driver him, an important driver him. Oh, unless you're a Manor fan, I guess, then it's not so good, because your Manor team is no longer scoring a lot of money, and it does have implications for those race seats, but that's a story for another day when they make those decisions. The Brazilian Grand Prix was a fascinating Grand Prix. It was worth every minute in the end. It was a long one, but absolutely worth the racing we were delivered. There's only one question left now, and that is, what do you think's going to go down in the final race of the year in Abu Dhabi? Rosberg maintains a championship lead, but, well, you know, anything can happen in Abu Dhabi, as we've seen in years past.
I can see the most logical ending there would be Hamilton first, Rosberg second, playing it safe and being champion just like that. Just like he has been playing safe for 6 or 7 races. But everything can happen. We remember 2014 when he had a failure and just wanted to finish the race. It's not a safe difference. It's far from that. He has a lot to fight for. I guess if he gets third, he will still be a champion. But with Red Bull improving, I don't know. Maybe Red Bull can play a part on the championship decision. And let's see. It's not that safe for Rosberg. He has the trophy on his hands. But Hamilton can take it away pretty dang easily.
It will be a fascinating race to watch. Fernando, if people want to hear more of you and people want to find you, where can they look?
Well, if they speak Portuguese, that's an important factor. They can find me on Podcast F1 Brazil or Boteco F1 on YouTube, as well as the Brazilian pages of Apex Race Manager. So if you speak Portuguese, you can find me there. I sometimes tweet in English, so if you want to find me on Twitter, @FBrandãoCampos. I guess that's a little bit hard to get, but I'm sure that will be on the post.
Yeah, just go to the F1 Strategy Report website. You'll find it all there. Fernando, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
And we're out of time for this edition of the Strategy Report. If you want to read more about the strategy of the Brazilian Grand Prix, go to f1strategyreport.com for Jack Leslie's write-up of all the action from Sao Paulo, or search for F1 Strategy Report on Facebook and Twitter. The F1 Strategy Report is powered by Apex Race Manager, the new name for the mobile strategy game you used to know as Formula Legend. You can download it for iOS and Android devices and search for Apex Race Manager on Facebook and Twitter. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me @MichaelLaminato on Twitter. And be sure to join me in 2 weeks' time when we look back on the final round of the year, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.